Hi, this is Heather Esposito, and this is Leadership by Design. Welcome to today's episode of Leadership by Design. Today's guest is Robin Hills, who is the director of EI for Change, a company specializing in educational training, coaching, and personal development focused around emotional intelligence, positive psychology, and neuroscience. Robin has over 40 years business and commercial experience helping executives and leaders develop business performance through increased self-awareness and understanding of others. Robin has delivered keynote speeches and workshops on emotional intelligence at conferences around the world. He is registered with the British Psychological Society as an active member of the Committee for the Association of Business Psychology in the Northwest of England. Robin has developed the most comprehensive range of emotional intelligence online courses that are available on the internet, and these cover topics such as leadership, teamwork, conflict management, resilience, and communication skills. These fun, engaging courses have been taken by over 250,000 learners in over 180 countries. Welcome to our podcast today, Robin.
It's a pleasure to be on here, Heather. Thank you for inviting me along to speak to you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So let's just get started by getting to know you a little bit better. Can you tell us about your background and how you found your place in the world of emotional intelligence?
Yes, let me start off. Years and years and years ago, late last century, where I graduated with a degree in biology. And then I moved into pharmaceutical sales, working in the London teaching hospitals ultimately. And I did that role for about 15 years. And after about 15 years, the role was made redundant. And so I moved up to the Northwest to take up a leadership role in the pharmaceutical industry on the commercial side. And after a few years, that role was made redundant. So I went into clinical research on the pharmaceutical side, and did that for about 5 years. And you can guess what's coming next. After a little while, that role was made redundant. So I thought, the universe is trying to tell me something here. So what I did is I took all my skills, knowledge, and experience and thought, how can I package this up? What am I really good at? What do I really enjoy doing? What's my passion? And I realized it was working with people, helping to develop people, and to do so utilizing emotional intelligence, which was relatively unheard of at the time. And over the last 10, 15 years, I've been working with senior leaders across the world to help to develop the idea of working with people much more effectively, building teams, resolving conflict, collaboration, all the good things that you mentioned in my bio. Now, I'm not going to make myself redundant. I think ultimately, with a fair wind, I should be looking at retirement at some point. But what does that mean? I'm going to carry on. Carry on. And that's not going to be for years. So that's me. That's where I am. And that's where I'm at. And that's where emotional intelligence comes in.
And emotional intelligence seems to be gaining more and more traction, especially as we look at some of the jobs that can be replaced by computers and AI. They talk about the things that are the jobs that can't be done by AI or the things that make us uniquely human, and emotional intelligence fits into some of that.
That's right. And I think the important thing to consider that any kind of process-driven job can and will be taken over by the robots eventually. And that even includes things like complex surgery and medicine in the clinical arena, some of the financial services. All of these industries are not safe. But the important thing here is that we are human, and what the computers will never be able to do is to replicate the very essence of being human. And part of being human is how we work with our emotions and how we use our intellect and our intelligence to build relationships and get connected, cultivate the connections that we need to make in terms of the work that we do. But it's also about developing empathy, because this is something that the computers will never be able to do, ever. They just do not have what we've all got, which we should be pleased about and proud of, and that's a brain.
So maybe as we get started, level setting with a definition of emotional intelligence might be a good start, because I think it's become so popularized that you hear a lot of people using it. And I don't know that they're always using it with a consistent definition. So as we talk about it today, how would you like to define it for the context of our conversation?
Well, I think the important thing to say up front is that emotional intelligence is a very complex construct, but it can be very simply defined as being smart with your feelings. It's building up relationships with people, authentic relationships, and making quality decisions by utilizing and combining your thinking with your feelings. That's it.
That connects so much, as you mentioned a minute ago, to our leadership principle of cultivating connection. And as we've become more separated due to physical distancing in the last year, but even as we come back, we're looking at working in new ways that require people to work together, whether they're in a physical space or in a virtual space together. So some of these emotional connections, do you find we have to look at them the same or different in the real versus the virtual environment?
I think we have to look at them in similar ways, but in different ways, just by the very nature of the environment that we're operating in. So we do have to build up rapport with people. We do have to recognize that people will have different experiences, different understandings, different viewpoints, different skill sets. And we really do need to recognize that, whether that's across the thousands of miles that we are actually speaking, or whether we're in the same room together. So a lot of connecting with people is being able to determine how you are emotionally engaged with a person. And it's being able to pick up on subtle cues of body language and tonality and what the person is saying, but looking at that at a deeper level. So it's really truly trying to understand the other person's viewpoint, the other person's perspective. And a lot of that is done through building up rapport, connecting, utilizing empathy. And another key component of that is asking appropriate questions to find out more information. It's coaching.
So where would you like to dig first, the empathy or the coaching? Because I'm interested in talking to you about both topics.
Well, let's talk about both, but let's start with empathy and carry on with empathy, because empathy is a fundamental component of emotional intelligence. It's an awareness of other people. And it really is, as I keep saying, it's understanding their viewpoint, understanding their perspective. Now, you may vehemently disagree with some of the things that they are thinking and saying, and it may be that it's different to your values, your upbringing, your experience. It may be different in terms of your belief. It might be that they have a different sexual orientation, a different religion. They may have a different political views. You do not have to agree with them. You just have to understand them. And that is the core component of empathy. It's this understanding. And if you work to understand somebody, you're actually building up that empathy. And the way to do that is to ask more and more questions. That's an interesting point. I've never thought about it that way before. Can you tell me more? What makes you think that? How can I understand that better? What is it that I need to understand in order to see things in a similar way to you? All of these are good coaching questions. But empathy, where does empathy sit? This is a really interesting question, and this is never really discussed, because you and I, Heather, are building up a degree of empathy and rapport between us. Now, does empathy sit in my brain? Does empathy sit in your brain? The answer is no, it sits between us. And what we are doing when we are engaging with each other is we're changing each other's neurophysiology. We're changing each other's brains very subtly in the way in which we are working and communicating together. So your pathways are being either reinforced or they're being developed in a different way through what it is that I'm saying. So the interesting thing about empathy and rapport is that we cannot be empathetic on our own, and we can't grow and develop our brains and our social skills and our social connections unless we engage with other people. So with empathy, we are actually creating each other.
That's an interesting concept. So what, when you look at our world today, and if you kind of look at social media, look at news, it does not seem like we have a lot of empathy for each other or for a viewpoint or a perspective or an experience that's not our own. What gets in the way of us being able to have empathy, to do empathy well?
I think it's the medium. I think it's the way in which we're communicating. When we are communicating across distance, and particularly on social media, you can troll people very, very easily. You can put your views across quite vehemently, and you're not actually dealing with a particular person. You're actually dealing with a viewpoint. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people who do that forget that the other person at the other end is going to read that and have an emotional response to it. And part of trolling is actually to make that other person feel quite unpleasant about what it is that they've said. That's not empathy. That's not emotionally intelligent either. I'm all for having debate and all for disagreeing with people, but it's important to recognize that you're dealing with a person, you're not dealing with a computer, and that person is going to have an emotion. And a lot of people don't care about other people's emotions anyway. They're strangers. They're never going to meet them. So they will never really know the impact of what it is that they are saying and they're trolling. And a lot of it is tied up in unconscious bias, some of their biases. So they're reinforcing their biases by stating their views, and they find groups of people that share their views. And that can be quite dangerous at times, because it takes them down pathways that perhaps they shouldn't go or they wouldn't go in the real world, but they can do so very easily online.
That, as I hear you talk about, it's easy for us to kind of dehumanize a person and think of them as a name or a computer, if you will, that we don't visualize like a human behind that profile. That connects with me to a podcast that I heard Brené Brown did.
Yes.
And it's similar to even when we use dehumanizing language, calling a group of people animals or thugs, or put whatever word you want, but using that to categorize a group is the same idea of, is once we dehumanize someone or a group, it's much easier to lose the empathy, because we no longer see them as human beings with emotions. And
which brings in equality and diversity issues here, because again, as humans, the way in which our brains operate is that we filter things through generalizations. We put things into groups. We're very good at doing it, and we will then label those groups, and it helps us to categorize things in the world. It's some short circuits that help us to make sense of where we are. I think the important thing to recognize is that sometimes those labels are they're better off labels that we keep to ourselves. And you go into working with that group very much with an open mind, and you go in with empathy and say, I can learn something here. This is a group that I'm not familiar with. Mm. How is it that they see the world? What is it that they're doing? How are they viewing things? And what can I learn through this process?
Yeah, as you were talking about that originally, the inclusion was the one word that came to my mind as you started talking about empathy. Is in order for me to be more inclusive of others as a leader, holding their perspective as valid is one of those first most basic things. It's valid for them, even though I might not relate to it, even though I might not have experienced that. That doesn't discount it as being valid for someone else.
No, that's right. And I think the other important thing here is just to recognize who you are and what you are and be proud of that. I'm a middle-aged white Englishman. I'm never going to change that. That's what I am and who I am. I'm never going to be an American lady like you. So just embrace that and be proud of that. But utilize the pride, the emotion of pride, in the most appropriate way. And it's to be proud of it in a way that you are building relationships and you're helping people, rather than being so proud of who you are and what you are that you actually dismiss other people because they're not as good as you are, in whatever way you want to define that.
Yeah. So let's get back to the coaching piece. I've shared our leadership principles and practices with you, and we believe coaching, we call it the language of leadership. And yes, we believe it's so important that under each leadership principle, there is a coaching practice that a leader engages in to live that principle. So, and you've given us some great examples of some good coaching-like questions. What do you see as the value of coaching as a leadership skill?
Well, I think you've got to look at the fundamental principles of coaching and really recognize what they are and put those into practice. Now, I'm sorry to say that a lot of people who will listen to this podcast may actually think to themselves, yes, I know what leadership is all about. Do they really? Because I'm a coach. I've got a number of coaching clients, and I'm still learning about coaching, and I still get it wrong. Coaching really is the ability to help the other person to make the decisions that they need to make. So it's knowing how to ask the right questions. And I think the problem with a lot of leaders is that they will lead by telling somebody what to do, and then they'll follow it on with a few questions. I'm now coaching. So this is the strategy. This is what I think we should be doing. How are you going to make this work? What is it you need from me? Well, that isn't coaching. That is not coaching. There are elements of coaching within that, but you've actually got to go along to somebody and say, right, this is the strategy. What is it that you think will work from here? What is it that you can do? What is it that you need from me? And I think the other part of coaching, which is often overlooked, and I think this is where coaching itself falls down, is that a lot of coaches out there, professional coaches, have this attitude that the information, the essence of what you're trying to get a person to do and how you're trying to coach that person is to get the information, to get the answer out of them. And so you ask questions until that happens. Well, yes, to a certain extent, I agree with that. But there are going to be times when you get a person who gets so stuck, they need some help. So the challenge then is to be able to balance ask coaching against educate coaching. So as a leader, it's a case of this person does not have the skills, the experience, and the knowledge. I, as a leader, need to impart that. So I need to educate the person through coaching. And then when it's appropriate and as quickly as possible, revert to tell coaching. So it's not a case of tell all the time, which is what a lot of leaders mm-hmm. do. It's a little bit of ask coaching, tell coaching, back to ask coaching again. And I think a lot of the coaches will just go down the ask route, which is pure coaching. And I think true good quality synergistic coaching sits somewhere between the two.
We talk a lot about the different hats that a leader wears. As a professional coach myself, I would say I typically sit more in the pure coaching bucket. And when someone's stuck, part of our framework is how do we ask what we call awareness questions and thought process questions that create reflective space where insights can emerge that help them move forward. And at times, it's like you discover through that awareness that they're missing some key information. So where can they go get that information? Or if I happen to know, I can, and I'm really typically personally, I say, I'm going to take off my coaching hat and I'm going to put on my teaching hat right for a minute, because I think I have some information that I can share. And I try and be pretty explicit about that so that for the participant or the coachee, they're not confused between what coaching is and what it isn't, that I'm actually kind of switching into another mode, or I ask permission to share something that I think may be relevant so that they have an opportunity to choose to receive it and figure out whether it's going to be helpful or not. Because I think a lot of what you see too.
I would agree with you. And I think a lot of true coaching and true leadership coaching is being able to have that conversation with people. I'm moving out of coaching mode now. Are you comfortable with me giving you this information? Is it something that you want to go and research yourself? Or in terms of moving the conversation forward, let me give you this little nugget of information and then let's get back to asking you questions. Now you've had that nugget. How does that fit into what you're thinking? How does that change your thinking? What is it that we need to explore further? So you go back into asking these very deep, penetrating, open questions, but do it with a degree of empathy, understanding, and to coach in an appropriate way for that particular person.
Yeah, I do find, you know, and again, I've fallen into the same trap myself of, when you hear somebody coming with a challenge or a problem, you do want to fix it so badly for them. It's like, oh, I can take this pain away from you. So it's so easy to fall into a tell, or my favorite is, I'm going to couch my suggestion in a question so that it feels like I'm coaching, but I'm really still just trying to get my agenda onto the table. And that's never received as well as when someone has the opportunity to self-discover, to work through it on their own, through the use of powerful questions that a leader can ask. And then through that, a leader can discover, is coaching still the right avenue to help my employee through it? Or do I need to put on a teaching hat? Or sometimes it's, I have to put on my boss hat and say, I appreciate this thinking, but here's the direction we need to take here. And maybe a leader has additional information. So a leader is never in a, I guess, pure coach role. It's one of the roles that they can play. And sometimes they have to make a decision and move forward because of additional information they have.
Yeah, this brings up another interesting aspect of emotional intelligence, and that's awareness of self. It's awareness of your strengths, your limitations, your behaviors, and your preferences. So what is it that you prefer to do when you're interacting with people? Now, a lot of people want to help. They want to be kind. And by being kind, they don't want to see people struggling when they're being asked awkward questions. So they will provide them with some answers to try and make themselves feel better by helping the other person to feel better. That's not coaching. And then another aspect is that a leader may be very task focused. very task focused. And if that's their strength, then it's important for that leader not to get that focus, let that focus get in the way. So let's drive the task forward. It's not happening as quickly as I would like it to be because I've got to do this coaching and I've got to ask loads of questions. So let's focus back on what we're here to do and get the task done. And then some other people are very analytical in the way in which they approach coaching, and they want detail after detail after detail after detail. And if they don't get it, they will want to provide the detail. So you've got to have an understanding of yourself as a coach in order that you can then coach efficiently and effectively. Now, for my own part, I can be quite creative and quite innovative and come up with really wacky ideas, brilliant ideas that I think would work for that particular individual. It's very difficult to keep quiet. Oh, I've had a good idea. No, I can't tell you. What sort of ideas have you come up with? That's not a very good one. But the important thing is, again, it's this self-awareness and recognize what you bring as a coach into that coaching space, because that's going to change your coaching dynamic. And it's also going to change the empathy.
And that feels like it's even more important in the way we're talking about the future of work. If presenteeism or being together in the office is not one of the ways as a leader that I'm managing work, and I'm counting and trusting my team to be self-accountable, then how are we creating more ownership into the idea creation so that when they're not near me with me, that they've done the thinking. They've got the ownership and responsibility for seeing the project forward. I've created enough clarity around the expectations on outcomes and then turned it over to them to figure out how to get it done. And then just holding, coaching them to personal accountability on that. It feels like ownership is part of that ideation.
Well, I think it brings in another component here that we do need to talk about as leaders, particularly as the working environment is changing, and that's trust. It's building up trust so that the person is out of sight and out of mind, but you're trusting them as a leader to be doing good stuff. And you're actually not measuring inputs anymore, you're measuring outputs. So what is it that they are achieving and how are they achieving it? So if at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, somebody wants to pick the kids up from school, walk the dog, go out for a walk for themselves, go to the post office, it doesn't matter, because as long as the person actually delivers agreed objectives, agreed outcomes, agreed indicators, key performance indicators, or call it what you will, I think there's OKRs coming in, which is outcomes and key results. But as long as people are focusing on those, that's the important thing. And it doesn't happen without trust. And a lot of leaders find it very, very, very difficult to be trusting and to be trusting of people when they are working in their home environment.
So what advice do you have for leaders who might be listening to this podcast and struggling with that?
Look at the levels of trust that have been put onto you as a leader and replicate it to the people that you are actually leading and give them the same levels of trust. There's no easy answer, Heather. I mean, that's just something that has occurred to me. I don't know. To be perfectly honest, I think a leader really has to look at their people, their team, the people that are following them, their colleagues, and just say, how can I build up levels of trust? How can I trust my people better? What is it that I need to do? What is it I need to see them doing and hearing them saying in order that it gives me the comfort, the feelings of pleasantness that I can extend that level of trust to them. And I would suggest that they take that as a topic of conversation to converse with their coach.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion. I've always, or for a very long time, been a remote employee. And as a leader, I don't live in the same city with any of my team. So for me, some of that, it just comes by default because I don't have another choice, you know, so it's, but it is a challenge when you have experienced the leading through presenteeism, leading through being in the space with you all the time, being part of all conversations, to shift to this new way of thinking, new way. It's a mindset shift for a leader.
It is, and we've got the situation where the chief executive or the CEO of Morgan Stanley.
Yes.
The CEO of Morgan Stanley has been saying that he wants everybody to be back in the office. Why? It's fulfilling his need, not the needs of his employees. And I think what will happen is that if he is so insistent on that happening, people are going to walk. People are going to go and find other jobs. They don't have to work in the office as long as they're actually being productive. And they can probably be more productive in their home environments if the environment is conducive to allow that to happen than they can be in the office, because they're not being distracted. Oh, I'll just go to the coffee machine. Oh, we'll have an impromptu meeting, shall we, with somebody that you've met on the walk to the coffee machine. So the distractions are a lot less, and it means that people can actually be more focused on what it is that they're doing. And I think the other important factor that's been completely overlooked here is the fact that people have not missed the commute. The half hour, hour and a half at the beginning of the day getting to the office, and exactly the same time at the end of the day. And it brings in another component here, and that's the cost of commute, because who actually has to pay to commute to the office? The employee. Therefore, working at home means that they actually get more money, more disposable income in their pocket. So there's a lot more in terms of issues than just, oh, I want everybody in the office. There are so many more factors, and there are many more factors that I've not even considered.
And as a company that's in the office furniture industry, we do believe there is a compelling reason for the office and for the workspace, but it should be the thing that invites us in, not the thing that mandates we be in. You know, the connections, the collaboration that can occur, and some of the ideation that can move at a quicker pace when we're in the room with whiteboards and sticky notes. Yes. And overhearing somebody else talking about things, or strengthening those weak connections that are people that may not be on our team, but that we have a chance to interact with when we're walking around the office space together. Those are the things that we don't want to lose as we look at the future of work, and we believe are critical to the physical space that we have. And there's also just mandating that people come in to be on a video call like we're doing right now, or to do your email, doesn't feel, to your point of commuting and time use, the most effective place that I might be able to do that. And go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think it's vitally important to recognize that there will be a need to go into the office, but when you go into an office with your team, then you're actually being more focused on quality engagement. Exactly. Rather than just going into the office for the sake of it. So if you go into the office and it's agreed that everybody is in the office on a Thursday and a Friday, then everybody has to be in the office on a Thursday and Friday and make sure that they do the good stuff in the office that they can't do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And I think the opportunities for you as a furniture or an office furniture organization, a supplier, actually opens up and increases because you will need to provide good quality furniture, business furniture for the home environment. So
we have seen a big uptake in that throughout the pandemic. And a lot of companies have realized if people are going to work from home, we need to equip them to not be sitting on a kitchen chair that was never designed for 8 hours of use. So that's actually been a business segment that accelerated during the pandemic. And some employees may want to be in 5 days a week. So for some employees, the home environment may not be ideal, the distractions, the space. So they may actually be seeking to come to the office because that is the better place for them to work.
And that's down to your relationship with your company, your organization, your leader, and have that conversation. Where are you going to be most productive? Because the organization is buying your productivity. They're not buying your physical body in a particular room. So where are you going to be most productive? If it is in the office 5 days a week, because that's what you prefer, then the organization has to work to allow that to happen. I think the organization has got a lot of the organizations have a lot of thinking to do around getting the best out of their people as we emerge out of the pandemic and move into a new future as to and what that's going to be. Goodness only knows, but I'm really looking forward to it because I think it'll be better.
And we're looking forward to the experimentation and the things that we're talking about is what's safe to try. Let's try it for a week or two. Let's learn from it. What did we like? What didn't work? What do we want to try next? Not only so that we can do the right thing for our employees and for our organization, but also in service of our customers so that we can help them navigate this journey based upon the work we're doing for ourselves, because yes, we manufacture furniture, but we believe the spaces that we create and the types of work that can be done in different spaces are just really enabled by the furniture. We see it as a much larger conversation about how space supports the work and the people to do the kinds of things they need to do.
Yes, and also within that space, you're having cathartic conversations, you're having coaching conversations, and there are going to be decisions that are made that you don't like. They're either going to come from your colleagues, they're going to come from your leaders, they're going to come from the C-suite executives, they're going to come from clients. Mm-hmm. You're not going to like it, but you're going to have to live with it and work around some of these decisions. So as a leader, the leader is responsible for the emotional climate within the organization. Emotional intelligence is not about being nice and making everybody feel woolly and fluffy and happy all the time. It's actually recognizing what the emotions are that are driving the climate, bringing those emotions to the surface and working with them. So if somebody's unhappy, why are they unhappy? Help them to not necessarily be happy, but help them to be content with the fact that the decision might not necessarily have gone the way that they want it to. So what supports do they need in order to live and breathe and value the decision that's been made rather than fight against it all the time?
I think that's a really important point because I think sometimes emotional intelligence, or let's just group all the softer skills or what's typically are called soft skills, can feel fluffy or can feel a little bit in the positive psychology realm, maybe. And actually, if you're doing it right, you're leaning into the even harder things. Like we're not going to avoid talking about those emotions. Let's dig into them and actually see what's underneath them so we can deal with what's real versus what's on the surface, or typically how it comes out, especially in the professional environment, is in more passive aggressive behavior. Yeah. I'm upset, I'm disengaged. And so rather than talking about it, because that's not okay to do or not safe to have those conversations, I'll I'll show up in a way that tries to demonstrate how I'm unhappy without actually saying that, and more passive aggressive.
And I think it's important to have those conversations. Say, look, I am unhappy about this, and I don't feel that I've been heard. So the leader's responsibility is to listen, is to hear what is being said and to understand the emotion behind it. So that the person may not necessarily like the decision, but they've had the opportunity to be heard and to share their viewpoint. And I think that's a very grown up, it's a very emotionally intelligent conversation to have.
And I actually, in some of my experience, have discovered that when you have those conversations, that what's really behind it is not the thing. It's that I was missing some information and I might have been making up a story about what I believed was happening that wasn't even true, but I didn't ask for the information I needed and was operating kind of off a false narrative, or it was I was afraid of how I was being seen versus what seemed like the problem on the surface. There was something else behind it.
And the only way you can find that information out is through coaching.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
We keep coming back to it.
I know.
We do keep coming back to it. And I make no apologies for it, because it is an emotionally intelligent approach. It's giving the other person the authenticity to be able to express themselves in an appropriate way. And what else?
Yes.
Tell me more. Is there anything else? Go on. There is something else I can tell. Tell me more. It's having that kind of psychological safety to put around people so that they can have those conversations, knowing full well that they can trust the person who is hearing what it is that they're saying. We keep coming back to the same things,
trust,
but presenting
coaching,
them. Yeah, we're coming back from different angles. So the trust works both ways. Do I trust my leader? If I really pour my heart out to my leader and tell them what I think, what are they going to do with that information? If they're going to use it against me, my trust goes. If they're actually going to listen and hear and do nothing with it, but other than support me with that, or perhaps make some changes because they've heard something that they hadn't realized or weren't aware of before, then I can have that level of trust in the relationship that I need. And it's a good level of trust, and it's a good authentic relationship, and we can build it up together.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing is as we're encouraging employees to step up and to share, and we're asking leaders to ask the questions that create the environments, how we respond to what they share is equally important, to not defend it, not to dismiss it, to get more curious, which actually ties into one of our values is, kind of seek solutions with infinite curiosity. Yep. That the more curious I get to understand and then talk about that versus feeling like I have to fix it, solve it, defend it, dismiss it, because I don't know what to do with it as a leader.
Yeah. And again, that's part of leadership self-awareness. It's having that understanding that you are going to have your own emotional responses to what it is that you're hearing and what you're engaging with other people. So it builds in another component of emotional intelligence, which is self-regulation. Mm. And it's how you manage your emotions and how you work with your emotions. Anyone can become angry. That's easy. But to be angry with the right person at the right degree, at the right time, for the right reasons, that's not easy. And that's not the actual quote, but that was said originally by Aristotle back in ancient Greece. So anyone
can
become
angry. We've been trying to figure this out a long time.
Look, I'm an emotional intelligence coach, trainer, and facilitator. If anybody knows how to do it, can they let me know, please? this is incredibly difficult. So you may hear some things that your employees will be telling you that will make you angry. How are you going to deal with that? Are you going to be angry with the employee for telling you something that you didn't like hearing? Or are you actually going to utilize that anger and motivate yourself to find out more information? Or perhaps if somebody's transgressed one of your core values, then you're going to go and do something about it.
I actually just had a friend tell me last week that their leader said, I'd like to get some feedback from the team. And the team shared some feedback about some things that they would like to see different. And the leader blew up and says, I can't deal with this right now. When they asked, and they're the ones that asked in a group setting. And when the team started to share some things back, the leader was not prepared for that. So just goes speaks to what you're saying about how important we need to be prepared. If we ask the question, we have to be prepared to hear things that may be difficult for us, but I'd rather have the information so I can know what I need to work on than be naive.
I think that's an important point, because if the leader does blow up and they then ask for feedback in the future, the trust has gone. So if I actually tell the leader what they need to hear or what they are asking me to hear, am I going to get the same negative response? Well, I'd rather not have that response, so I just won't be honest with you anymore. So the leader has to watch their behavior and how they're responding and how they're reacting. There is one thing.
That's what happened. That's what happened in this instance. Yeah. And, you know, it's not one of our employees or leaders, but they felt the same way. Like, I'm not going to say anything in the future. It's not okay. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
There is one other thing that I do need to say, just for completeness. There are going to be certain situations where coaching is not appropriate. And as a leader, the leader must choose when to coach and when to actually go into a more autocratic, commanding style of leadership. And that's in situations where people are unsafe, in disciplinaries, where people have actually gone against the company's values and done something really untoward. And in those circumstances, there's no nicety around it. It's really just explaining and telling people that their behavior is out of order or that they need to act and behave quickly. There's a fire behind you, Heather. Your plant's gone up in smoke. How would you like to deal with it? What do you think would be the best way that we could work with the environment as it changes around us? No, get out of there as quickly as possible. Come on, Heather, grab your stuff, get out of there, and we'll sort it all out. And then you go back into coaching once the emergency has gone.
Yeah, so I'm hearing two key instances. Yeah, safety, emergency, and also if behavior or performance has gone what we would describe as out of bounds.
Yes. And I think it's knowing and it's having the capability as a leader of going out of dealing with that individual in an authoritative way. A lot of coaching leaders, a lot of affiliative leaders, a lot of democratic leaders will find it very difficult to go there and to do that because they feel that they're going to not be liked and they feel that they're not being a coaching leader anymore. So it's having that understanding when it's appropriate to change your leadership style to become much more an instructive leader and to actually discipline people in the most appropriate way. You know, if somebody's been truly offensive to a client, they've been rude, they've sworn at a client, that is not acceptable. So it needs to be dealt with. You don't coach somebody through that purpose. What was it that the client said to you? Oh, how can we help you to deal with the client in a happier way? No, you tell somebody that they've been transgressed the boundaries, they've gone out of bounds, and it needs dealing with.
One of the quotes that I love related to that is, we're defined by what we tolerate. And so as leaders, even when, if we're afraid to step into those hard conversations, it actually diminishes your credibility with the other team members who are working within the guidelines, because it's like, well, wait, hold on. Here I'm upholding our values. I'm performing in the ways that are expected, but it doesn't seem to matter if you don't. So it almost diminishes how you're seen as a leader and trust with the team members that are doing the right things and living according to the values when you're not able to do that.
Yes, most definitely. And it goes back to what I've said all along. This is very, very difficult. These soft skills, they're the hardest ones to train in.
Oh, they are. Like, I that's why I hate them being called soft skills. Yeah. They're the hardest ones. I can skill on competency-based things. That's the easy part.
Yeah.
Soft skills are hard. Well, Robin, I know we're coming to the end of our time today, so I'd like to do our rapid fire questions with you. Are you game to play?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, so the first one's a fill in the blank. Leadership is?
Leadership is being authentic, but leadership is also being emotionally intelligent.
Love that. Who's a leader you admire and why?
This might come as a strange leader for you. David Bowie.
Okay, that one, I was not expecting that. Say more.
Well, here we have somebody who had the ability to lead change and respond to disruption. He was able to follow his own pathway. He was able to be a bit different, but he brought people along with him. And he was able to collaborate with other people to bring the best out of them. So he would actually transgress different music genres and bring people together, and brought out a piece of art that just challenged people's perception of what they were listening to and opened up new areas of music. So he fulfills for me all those leadership principles.
That's awesome. What are you currently reading?
I'm actually currently reading a book called The Hidden Spring, which is a book written by a chap called Mark Soames, who's a psychoanalyst and a neurophysiologist. He's South African, and he was responsible for defining the brain mechanisms of dreaming. And I got a Saturday newspaper, which is unusual, back at the beginning of the year, and there was book review in there. And I thought, oh, this looks absolutely fascinating. So I bought the book and I read it. And people have actually said this book is going to be as transformational as The Origin of Species by Darwin. And I believe that they're right. However, it's not an easy read, very rewarding, but I have only read about a half of it, and I find that I need to be in the right space to read a chapter, and I'm pleased when I've done it. So, The Hidden Spring by Mark Soames.
I'm definitely intrigued based upon your description, so we'll have to talk about that in the future. And what do you love about your work?
I love the ability to be able to be creative, innovative, to communicate with a vast array of people globally and to help people on their journeys to become more emotionally intelligent.
Thank you, Robin. For those of you who are listening, Robin has made one of his courses available free to listeners, and it's a course on mindfulness that you can find on his website. We'll put the link in the notes field of the podcast so that you can access that. So thank you, Robin, for sharing that with us as we utilize that as one of the ways that we can become more, increase our self-regulation is through an increased practice of mindfulness. So thank you for joining us today. This has been a great conversation about how we bring the skills of emotional intelligence to our leaders.
Thank you ever so much, Heather. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great, thank you. Remember, everyone deserves to have a great leader, so keep working at being the best leader you can be. Until next time. This podcast is an original production of Global Talent Management at Herman Miller Group. It's hosted by me, Heather Esposito, and produced in music by Sean Beck.